show. Aye, aye, come on, come on. Aye, here's a chance to win $50 in cash money to the man who stayed three rounds with the terrible Ivan. Three rounds for $50. Do I have a taker? Do I have a taker?
Old Pop Carson shook his head sympathetically as he watched a pale young man step out of the crowd and up onto the makeshift carnival ring. Almost unconsciously, he muttered to himself, "That kid in there with that gorilla? That's dynamite!"
And thus we begin another story by The Player, starring America's most versatile actor, Mr. Paul Frees. Will be with you after a worthwhile message from your announcer. The Player, Mr. Paul Frees.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is The Player, welcoming you to our presentation of Johnny Dynamite. Pop Carson watched the young man in the ring methodically peel off a worn, checked coat and follow it with shirt and tie. They slapped the gloves on him. Then the barker stepped to the microphone in the center of the ring.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a young man with courage, and the opportunity to win $50. In this corner, the challenger.
What's your weight, Bob?
At 175 pounds, Johnny Dream. Three rounds, $50 if he stays the limit with the terrible Ivan.
The fighters stepped together and Old Pop watched closely. He hoped the gorilla would show some sympathy. But how could he under the rules of the contest? $50 was $50 at the carnival. The kid led with the left, and suddenly it came. A bone-crunching right hand that literally picked up the kid in the air and sent him to the canvas with a sickening thud. He rested on one knee a moment, shaking his head with a dark smudge from the dirty canvas hiding the crimson welt on his cheekbone where the glove landed. Then he stood up. And the big gorilla on the other side of the ring moved in for the kill. But suddenly there was an explosion. With all the speed of a rapid-fire machine gun, the kid lashed out with a left, right, in a flurry of leather, and the big man toppled to the canvas. Pop realized with one glance at the ring that business in this part of the carnival was over for the night. The kid slowly put on his shirt and coat and walked over to the amazed barker to collect his $50. Then he pushed through the crowd towards the tent entrance. Pop followed him and finally caught up with him down the midway which led from the carnival grounds.
Listen, kid. My name is Pop Carson. I used to manage a string of fighters. Yeah? Yeah. And now listen, kid. I've been waiting a lifetime for a fighter with a punch like yours.
You got the wrong guy, Pop. I only punch when I get pushed around. That's why I got in the ring back there. Give me a chance to kick back a little at the people that kicked me.
Well, tell me then. Why shoot for a measly $50? Why not step into a ring where you can make yourself some real money? You could put yourself in a spot where nobody could kick you around.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe I never talked to the right guy.
Listen, kid. Where you staying, huh?
Where am I staying? I got a private berth on a freight car. First one that leaves town tonight.
Why not come up and stay with me just for tonight, huh? We could talk this over. I could give you a good dinner. And if you still feel like leaving town, I'll take you down to the train tomorrow myself.
Okay, Pop. What have I got to lose?
If Pop Carson laid the groundwork that night, he added a complete convincer the following day. And it wasn't long before the Carson home and training camp rang to the steady rat-a-tat-tat sound of the light bag and the shouts of the old manager as he put the kid into serious training. Pop brought him along slowly, taking no chances, making no mistakes of early overmatches. And almost at once, the kid caught on with the sports reporters. It was that sudden explosive burst of power which caught their fancies. That amazing flurry of energy which Pop had first seen at the carnival. That was the reason they soon tabbed him Johnny Dynamite. The weeks passed, and under Pop's guidance, the kid moved along fast, taking his fights one at a time, and taking them quickly. Meanwhile, he lost a lot of that strange, hard quality which had been so much a part of him when Pop had first picked him up at the carnival. Perhaps that was because of the girl, Jean. The old trainer had worried a little when Johnny began to take her out, but he soon realized that she was helping the kid, helping him lose that bitter shadow underneath his eyes. One night, Johnny returned home late to find Pop sitting out on the front porch steps.
Been out with Jean?
Yeah.
You're going to have to cut out this 11 o'clock business soon, kid. I got a wire from New York today okaying that Tiger Miller match. It's a big time for you now, kid. Madison Square Garden.
Gee. Gee, Pop, that's great. You know, Pop, Jean's real people. She don't mind if I'm a fighter. No, sir. She says, look at Gene Tunney. Nothing wrong with him. Says I gotta read books. I gotta be the best fighter on earth. For her. I waited a long time for her, Pop. I don't know what would happen if I ever lost her.
Pop smiled quietly and noticed for the first time that the hard lines around the kid's eyes had disappeared. Preparations for the big fight with Tiger Miller went ahead at a rapid pace, with both Pop and Johnny bearing down harder than ever before because of what the win would mean. But almost at the outset, old Pop found that Johnny wasn't training right. Something was wrong. The terrific zip, that explosion of power which caused him to be called the Dynamite Kid, was missing. Pop tried everything he knew to bring the kid around, even going so far as to have a confidential talk with Gene, but still with no success. And it was with sad misgivings that the old manager set up camp in New York for the final week training before the fight. The big city newsmen were quick to show their disappointment when they gave the kid a look over. Where was all the dynamite they'd been reading about? Had it sizzled out like a firecracker with a wet fuse? Pop explained it away by saying the kid never trained that way, but the reporters refused to believe it, refused to print it. The afternoon of the kid's final workout, the old manager and Tex Jones's trainer sat in glum silence in the camp office.
I don't know, boss. I've exhausted myself trying to figure what's wrong with Johnny. Don't suppose something happened between Johnny and Jean, do you?
No. There's nothing wrong there that I know of.
Well, boss, I'm going to have a horseshoe, which in past performances has proved absolutely invulnerable, right with me at ringside. Maybe when Jean gets in town for the fight tomorrow night, maybe that'll make a difference, huh?
The old manager was quiet for a moment.
Yes, Dix, I'm sure that's going to help. It's got to. This is the kid's big chance. Well, come on. We've got to get Johnny over to the commission.
The night of the fight, Tex Jones paced nervously up and down the corridor which led to Johnny Dynamite's room below the big stadium. With a sigh of relief, he rushed up to old Pop Carson as he entered the hallway.
Boss, something terrible's happened. The kid just talked to Gene.
What? Is she down here?
No, boss, that's just the trouble. She called Johnny. They had a big blow-up.
Pop Carson made the door to Johnny's room in three-word steps. Johnny Dynamite sat on the edge of the training table, one taped fist pressed in the palm of the other. He didn't look up as Pop entered.
Gene isn't coming to the fight, Pop.
What do you mean, son?
The kid's tone snapped out.
Just what I said. She isn't coming down for this fight or any other.
Why, I can't understand.
Who is there can understand dames anyway? What was it I said about Gene Tunney? About reading books? That's a laugh. What a sucker I've been. Working, trying, sweating my heart out for this fight because it meant so much to both of us. So what happens? I get kicked around again. I get it all slapped right back in my face.
Old Pop couldn't conceal his franticness. Well, listen, kid. Just try to forget it, will you? Look, they're calling for you. You've got a fight up there.
I'll forget it. So help me, if it kills me, I'll forget it.
Pop Carson led the kid up into the ring. Tex Jones followed, a worried look on his face which not even the excitement of the crowd could erase. The ring preliminaries were over quickly enough, and the sound of the bell brought the two fighters together in the center of the ring. Old Pop couldn't help but notice a strange reappearance of the dark shadow beneath the kid's eyes. The two men sparred a moment for an opening. Then suddenly it came. That devastating explosion of leather, that whiplash of fury which made the kid famous. One brief flurry and the fight was over. Johnny stepped out of the ring, not a hair turned, not even breathing hard. Not even the dark look in his eyes changed. Pop Carson shoved all the fight crowd and reporters out of the room after the fight. Then he walked over and laid a hand on the kid's shoulder.
You were great, Johnny boy.
Yeah.
I was plenty worried before the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I tried to figure an angle. You know, Johnny, a woman's word is dynamite.
Johnny looked up suddenly.
You mean that phone call from Jean was a phony?
The phony with a purpose, kid. She's outside now.
Waiting for you.
And that's the end of another story as told by The Player, your one-man theater, Paul Frees, who portrays all of the parts. Mr. Frees will return to the microphone after a brief message from your announcer.
Dynamite was written by Rich Hall and produced by Sam Kerner, with music composed and performed by Rami Idris. Special effects by Fred Cole. Your announcer was Gary Goodwin. Won't you join us again when we present another exciting story for your entertainment? This is The Player, Paul Frees, saying goodbye. Until next, we meet.